Good afternoon, everyone. I'm calling this meeting of the Taxes Committee to order for March 9th, 2023. Thanks for being here, everyone. The first item of business on our agenda is adopting the minutes for March 7th. Vice Chair Norris, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, Chair Gomez, and I move the March 7th meeting minutes.
All right. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, please say no. The motion carries, and the minutes for March 7th, 2023 are adopted. So members, today we are hearing two Social Security bills. So we have two different approaches, and the way we're going to, I just want to run over how we're going to run the hearing quickly. Also, like, you know, we have 19 Social Security bills in our possession. One or two of you may have submitted your own version of the Lissagard bill, and other members of your caucus. So as with all bills and taxes, we're going to lay these bills over for possible inclusion. So, you know, the fact that we're hearing these two bills, I mean, the approach could end up in one of these places or somewhere else, and we're going to work that out as we move forward. So for the first thing that we're going to do, because as those of us on the committee know, the treatment of Social Security income is different than other types of income, and so Mr. Williams is going to start out by just giving us an overview of that to ground us in the sort of particular treatment of this type of income. After that, we're going to have the bill authors come up and present their bills, and then we're going to have testimony, because I don't want like people to have to testify on both bills. So we're going to take testimony from the public on both of the approaches, and then once public testimony has concluded, then we'll move the bills, lay them over, and have member discussion. And we do have a lot of testifiers on the list. And so what I'm anticipating might happen, depending on how quickly we're able to get through our discussion today, is that this might spill over into Tuesday's meeting. We do have other bills scheduled for Tuesday. But what I'm thinking is, even if we can take, if we can get through testimony today, we can start member discussion. And then, you know, I want to make sure, I know this is an issue that's really important to a lot of members of the committee. And so it's really important to me that everybody gets to say what they want to say on the record about this issue, and that we're able to have a good discussion in Tax Committee on it. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to notify the committee that on the Lissagard bill, I do have a conflict of interest on that. The way it is right now with the legacy pension that I think only Representative Pawlowski and I it applies to. So that's, you know, it's always, if it's for everybody, then it's not a conflict. Well, it's not for everybody. So as long as that's in there, I mean, I'll participate, but I will not be voting on it. I know we're not voting on
right.
it until later, but I'll have to cut that part out.
Okay. Thank you for that, Representative Davids. Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just beginning, kind of the, you know, appreciate you hearing the bills today and the potential to move things into the rest of the week. But, you know, as far as the GOP caucus is concerned, you know, if it's open to the majority, you know, we would make a commitment to make no amendments if we were to move Social Security without any carve-outs, just straight Social Security tax benefit, and just move it straight to the floor. Our caucus would support that, and as a standalone bill, unamended, guaranteed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your comment. All right. So is there any other member comment or questions about how we're going to run this? I'm not seeing any. So we'll just turn it over to Mr. Williams from House Research.
Chair Gomez and members, for the record, I'm Sean Williams from House Research. Chair Gomez is asking today to discuss the tax treatment of Social Security under current Minnesota law, walk through the federal exclusion, the state subtraction, give some data on the tax treatment under current law, and then talk a little bit about the history of how the federal exclusion came to be and how that sort of compares to other kinds of retirement income. So under current law, there's two policies that lead to Social Security being partly taxed in Minnesota. There's a federal exclusion that we adopt because the starting point for our state income tax is adjusted gross income. There's also a separate state subtraction that taxpayers are allowed for any portion of benefits that are taxable federally. I'm going to start by discussing the federal exclusion. So for all taxpayers under federal law, between 15 and 100% of Social Security benefits are non-taxable federally. If you look at the table on this slide in front of you, there's two tiers that determine how much of your income is subject to tax. For married couples filing joint returns, it's the first tier starts at $32,000 of provisional income. That's an income definition you may not be familiar with that I'll be discussing later, but I think it's easier to sort of set that aside for now. Starting at from $32,000 to $44,000 for married couples, 50% of income is excluded. And then for taxpayers with provisional income above $44,000, the exclusion is 15%. So depending on where your provisional income falls, it also depends sort of how your other kinds of income and Social Security income stack. That determines what your federal exclusion is. Minnesota also has a state subtraction that allows taxpayers to subtract a portion of their federally taxable benefits. For married couples filing joint returns, that's $5,840. And for single and head of household taxpayers, it's $4,560. The subtraction is phased out, beginning at $88,630 of provisional income for joint returns and $69,250 for single and head of household taxpayers. It's fully phased out at about $117,000 for married joint returns and about $92,000 for single and head of household filers. That subtraction is forecasted to reduce revenues by $92.6 million in tax year 2023. Under current law, the Department of Revenue's forecast is that 362,900 returns would receive an average tax benefit of $255. I wanted to bring your attention on the House Research website. This is more for sort of your benefit at a future time. We have a calculator tool where you can input example taxpayers, the amount of Social Security income that they might have, and the amount of other kinds of income they might have. And it will show you sort of how what their tax treatment would be if Minnesota did not have that state subtraction, and also what their tax treatment would be under the full Social Security exemption proposal. This is a graph that sort of shows how these two state and federal exclusions interact with one another. So the blue area on the left is sort of is the federal exclusion. So you can see up to about, and this is for a married couple filing a joint return, it's between $25,000 and $50,000. The federal exclusion covers 100% of taxable income. That's because of that first exclusion tier that I discussed for the federal exclusion. The state subtraction begins to kick in as more income gets subject to tax federally, so it keeps a few more people from paying any tax on their Social Security income. And then you can see how it phases out there. So sort of as income goes up, you see that green wedge in the top right of this graph. That sort of shows you how the amount of benefits that are subject to tax changes with income. No one likes talking about income definitions, but I think it's helpful here just to mention that provisional income is a very kind of esoteric term. It's a federal income definition that's used to calculate how much of your Social Security is subject to federal tax. It starts with modified adjusted gross income. So for many taxpayers, it can be broader than adjusted gross income. For example, it includes non-taxable interest. It can also be lower for taxpayers that have Social Security income in some cases because you always include 50% of your Social Security benefits in provisional income. So if for example, you are one of those taxpayers that gets 100% exclusion federally, then you would add back half of your benefits to calculate provisional income. So it's a little bit confusing in this context because it can be both greater and lesser than your adjusted gross income, sort of depending on your unique situation. I thought it'd be helpful to maybe walk through at a high level, like the Social Security income in Minnesota and sort of where it all falls out in the different steps of this process. So I pulled some data from the Social Security Administration for 2020. It shows that there's about $19 billion of OASDI, that's Old Age Survivor Disability Insurance benefits, in Minnesota in that year. And this is for 2020, because it's the most recent data available from the Department of Revenue. In the Department of Revenue's sample of 2020 resident tax returns, there's about $14.9 billion of Social Security income. And that's because about $4.3 billion of income is represented among people who did not file a return, so they did not have a state liability, did not have a state filing requirement. So that's about 22% of the total benefits in the state. As you can see in this table here, the federal exclusion causes another $7.7 billion of Social Security income to be excluded. And that gets you to your federally taxable benefits, so it's about $7.3 billion in federally taxable benefits. The Minnesota subtraction takes off another $1.3 billion in benefits, and that leaves another $6 billion or so of potentially taxable benefits, is how I'm calling them. But among the returns that have potentially taxable benefits, that's returns where the federal exclusion and the state subtraction don't exclude the full amount of their benefits, there's another group of returns that just had no state liability. So their liability could have been wiped out by the standard deduction or a tax credit of some sort. So this gets to about $5.9 billion, or about 31% of all benefits are subject to tax in Minnesota. This is a similar sort of analysis, but instead of talking about the benefits, it's talking about households or individuals that pay that have Social Security benefits. So I pulled a similar number from the Social Security Administration. There's about 1.1 billion individuals in Minnesota receiving Social Security benefits in December 2020. And if you look at the tax sample that I mentioned, there's about 597 resident returns that had some Social Security income. One difficulty in making that comparison is that tax returns can represent one or two people potentially with benefits because you can file a joint return. And so the Social Security Administration has some data. They estimate that about 28% of households receiving Social Security do not file a return. And that's because they don't have tax liability. Either their income is, their Social Security is non-taxable, their income is wiped out by the standard deduction. And so using that number, I sort of have an estimate here of 829 households that have, or tax households that have Social Security benefits. So about 150,000 of those get the 100% federal exclusion. So that leaves you with about 447,000 returns that have Social Security that's taxable federally. Our existing safe subtraction wipes out their taxable security, Social Security, for about 82,000 returns. So that leaves us with about 365,000 that have potentially taxable Social Security income. Again, there's about 2% of those returns that just don't have any state liability, so probably the standard deduction or another credit wipes out their liability. And we're left with about 348,000 households in Minnesota paying tax on their Social Security benefits. And that's if you take that as a percentage of that 829,000 number, that's about 42% of households that receive Social Security. This next slide shows sort of a distributional analysis. This is an analysis of the sort of remainder. So it's the amount left over after the federal exclusion and after the state subtraction. So you can see here, sort of as you move up the income spectrum, there's sort of more benefits taxable as a percentage, and that's just a function of the federal exclusion and the state subtraction being phased out. So a big chunk of the total benefits is, I'd say, between $50,000 and $150,000. There's over 20% of total benefits in each of those income ranges. The second column, or the middle two columns show the share of resident returns. So these are resident returns paying Social Security tax, and again, it's falling in the $25,000 to $100,000 range, or I'd say to $150,000 is sort of the biggest groups there. So again, you get those are the returns that sort of still pay tax on their Social Security benefits. And on the right, I have percentages. I show you there the sort of total number of returns that have any Social Security income. And again, you can sort of see as the federal and state subtractions phase out on the far right, you can see sort of more and more returns are paying at least some tax on their benefits as those existing exclusions phase out. Last, Representative Gomez asked me to talk a little bit about sort of how Social Security income compares with other sorts of retirement income. This is kind of a simplification, but I think it might be a helpful way to think about all of this. There's sort of three kind of regimes for taxing retirement benefits. There's sort of what you might call a traditional IRA, 401k, where your contributions to the account are made pre-tax, so they're deductible, and then your distributions in retirement are taxable. And that's to sort of avoid double taxation. So it's taxed on one side, not the other. A Roth-style account is sort of the inverse of that, where your contributions are made after tax, but the distributions in retirement are tax-free. There's a third kind of less well-known, I think, system of taxing retirement benefits that applies to pensions. It's sort of, some pensions plans use the same structure as traditional or Roth IRAs, but there's others that are sort of partly taxable. And the idea here is that a portion of the contributions were made pre-tax and a portion were made after tax. So as a result, portion of the benefits would also be subject to tax, but a portion was not. And again, this is a simplification, but there's sort of three sources of income or financing for Social Security. There's employee contributions, which are made after tax, so you can't deduct the FICA taxes you have withdrawn for Social Security from your income. There's employer contributions that are pre-tax contributions that are deductible to the employer. And then there's also interest earned on Social Security Trust Fund, on Treasury securities purchased. And for self-employed individuals, this sort of same partially tax deductible treatment applies to your payroll contributions. So if you're self-employed, you can deduct 50% of the payroll taxes you've paid because you're also, in that case, paying both the employer and the employee side of the payroll tax. The last slide talks about the sort of changes to the Social Security that were made in 1993. So 1993 was the year that the 85% tier, that third tier from the first slide, was added to the federal Social Security exclusion. The federal exemption was designed to sort of mimic this third treatment I just discussed of pension income, where contributions are partially taxable and benefits are also partially taxable. I have a quote here on the slide. I won't read the whole thing from the House Budget Committee, but you know, this was they produced a report describing what their intent was with this, and they said the committee desires to more closely conform the income tax treatment of Social Security benefits and private pension benefits. So that's sort of what's motivating all of this. So in 1993, the Social Security actuary did a study to estimate if we applied sort of similar pension tax rules to Social Security that we apply to other pensions, what sort of is the ratio of taxes paid by the individual to benefits received. And they found that the average ratio was about 4 to 5% in 1993. The actuary also estimated that the highest possible ratio of taxes paid to benefits received was 15%. And that was for single highly paid males. And the reason is that single highly paid males don't have survivor benefits. Males tend to have shorter lifespans than women. And because they're highly paid, they probably pay more in payroll taxes. And for those individuals, it's about 15% was the ratio of payroll taxes paid to benefits out on the back end. And so Congress decided that they could subject up to 85% of benefits to taxation without imposing double tax. The confusing thing that's hard for sort of the conversation now is that there's no updated analysis of this. We don't know what the ratio is, sort of the high end for benefits, taxes paid to benefits received. So it's unclear to the extent that anyone under current law is being, you know, partially double taxed on a portion of their contribution. The Social Security Administration does say on their website that almost all beneficiaries still enjoy more favorable tax treatment for their benefits than is the case for private pensions. And that's because we have these 50% and 100% exclusion tiers in Social Security tax. And so that's sort of the lay of the land on, you know, how these are treated relative to other types of retirement income. And that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer questions if the committee has them.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Is everybody ready for their quiz on provisional income, double taxation? Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wondered if you could follow up on that final comment about the comparison of taxation of Social Security benefits as opposed to the taxation of private pension benefits.
Mr. Williams.
Chair Gomez, Representative Pinto, I guess, do you have a specific question, or do you want just maybe a little bit more clarity on that?
A little more, yeah.
You know, I think one way to describe it is in 1993, the Social Security Administration said what the highest sort of amount of taxes paid in to benefits received. And they thought in 1993, based on the actuarial study, that was 15%. And so they set this federal exclusion at least 15% for everyone. We don't really have sort of an up-to-date analysis. And for private pension plans, this is on the very bleeding edge of what I understand, but I think that the plan administrator works with the IRS to sort of determine what the ratio of your after-tax contributions in are to benefits received and calculates a specific ratio for those pensions. And so we don't really have sort of a similar analysis for Social Security, so it's hard to do sort of an apples-to-apples comparison there. Hopefully answer your question or provide some extra clarity.
Representative Pinto.
Just quickly, Madam Chair, I guess I sort of heard you at the end saying it's tough to make the apples-to-apples comparison, but then I'd heard you before saying that there is reason to believe, though, that there is more favorable treatment for private pensions. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but just if you could just help me understand what would cause it to be more favorably or how to think about that.
Mr. Williams, and could I ask you to just lean a little closer to your mic? I think some folks in the back are having trouble hearing. Thank you.
Chair Gomez and members, my apologies. I think it's hard to make an apples-to-apples comparison. I think that you can – I think the Social Security's assertion is that because we have these 50% and 100% exclusion tiers, there's a lot of people that are getting a more favorable treatment on Social Security than they might get on a comparable pension. However, the question is, are there people that have paid a very high amount of tax in relative to benefits received? And are there any of those people who paid in more tax than 15% of what they're receiving in benefits that might be subject to double taxation? And we just don't have actuarial data from the Social Security Administration on that second question.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll be quick. So just kind of as a follow-up question to you, so under current law, about 350,000 seniors are currently subject to the Social Security tax, approximately, would you say?
Mr. Williams.
Chair Gomez and Representative Swedzinski, I think it's 349-ish.
Okay.
And it's on, give me a moment, it's on slide.
Okay.
Slide 8.
Maybe. Yep, slide 8. So, $348,700.
Representative Swedzinski.
Sounds good. Thank you, Madam Chair. And does that $340,000 already include folks that are currently paying, or that's under current law? So above that, we would estimate that there's another 80,000 folks that would potentially, if we did tax Social Security from dollar one, it would be, you know, another 80,000 on top of that. So about 430,000 folks on Social Security.
Mr. Williams?
Chair Gomez and Representative Pazinski, if you look at the table on page 8 of these slides, there's 597 resident returns.
Yep.
With Social Security income of any kind. And then there's an additional, I'm estimating here, but 200,000 or so returns that don't have a filing requirement. It's kind of hard to know how many, I mean, returns are not individuals, so returns might represent two people in some cases, so that makes it a little bit harder. And then the other hard part of this is if we taxed, you know, Social Security from dollar one, potentially some of those individuals who have no filing requirement might have a filing requirement.
Gotcha.
But, you know, looking at a sample of tax returns, it's about 597,000. People who filed returns, 597,000 returns in tax year 2020 that had at least some Social Security income. All right.
Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you again. You know, so just it's about 349,000 individuals currently paying Social Security tax in Minnesota. So I think, you know, just as we're hearing these bills, I appreciate that we're hearing these bills. We have to make the discussion: who's going to spend that money better? Either the 349,000 individuals that are currently paying taxes on Social Security, or the 201 legislators in Minnesota. That's, at the end of the day, who's going to have to make that choice? Is it the 201 elected officials in St. Paul that's going to spend that money better, or is it the 349,000 families that are spending Social Security tax? So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Are there any further questions to the presentation? We're going to have a full conversation with our opinions about this at the kind of when it's member discussion time. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Mr. Williams. you did a great job on your presentation here, but I get a little nervous when we start comparing Social Security to pension plans. They are very different animals. They're funded differently. They are taxed differently when the money comes out. I think you did a good job trying to explain this here, but like I said, I get a little nervous anytime somebody tries to compare a pension plan with Social Security. They're very, very different, so it's kind of hard to do.
Thank you. Anybody else? Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Williams, for the presentation. Maybe I'm a little behind on this, but if you could kind of go through the chart again on slide 9, I just kind of wanted to get a better sense, because at one point you said that about 31% of the benefit, I guess, is being taxed in Minnesota, and I just wanted a little bit more clarification on that, or subject to tax in Minnesota. And then I kind of wanted to also better understand, like, of the various income brackets, who's, I guess, most subject to being taxed, the various income brackets.
Mr. Williams?
Chair Gomez and Representative Bajay, this $5.9 billion number here is sort of the residual amount that is subject to tax. So if you kind of take that number, you can go back to the slide on page 7 of the presentation, and you can see that that's sort of the end result here of that whole calculation. Okay. So that's of about $19 billion in the state. I guess if you're sort of looking in terms of benefits, you know, the percentages in the sort of second column on slide 9 sort of show you. So it's zero, effectively zero. It's a rounding error of people making less than $10,000 a year. 0.2% of the benefits taxable in Minnesota were $10,000 to $25,000, 6.5% from $25,000 to $50,000. You can sort of read through the table there. So that's sort of the amount that's taxable in Minnesota, that's how much is attributable to sort of each of those income slices. Another way to look at this, and that's why I sort of included it both, is this is of the individuals or returns that are subject to Minnesota Social Security tax, and this is sort of the distribution of individual or returns paying the tax. And that's the sort of second column in the middle there. So it sort of follows, but it's not one-to-one in terms of following the distribution of benefits.
Representative Agbaje?
I think that's all I have.
Great. Anyone else before we move to bill presentations? All right. I'm not seeing anyone. So thank you, Mr. Williams. With that, we will move to bill presentations. I don't know where my agenda is. It's gone. Let's see. All right, first up, welcome to the committee, you guys. Chair Lissegard, do you want to go first with House File 300?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. And to everyone that is here, there's a lot of passion on both sides. There's many different viewpoints, but I think that if we are methodical, polite, and kind, and have a discussion, I think that today and moving forward will go much easier. So,
I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt you. I'm just going to remind you about some folks are having trouble hearing. So if you could just make sure to lean forward. I don't know if there's any way to turn up the volume in the room.
Check.
Hey, that sounds better. All right.
I'm going to be live from the tax committee.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Lissegard.
Well, just to lighten the, All right. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. It is my honor to present this House File 300. As most of you know, I advocated for eliminating the state tax on hardworking Social Security benefits over the last several years. It is the number one issue that I heard on the doors. I will say that on the doors, not everyone understood that they didn't pay tax on Social Security at a state level. Approximately 50 plus percent don't pay. So there is a lot of confusion, and you heard when Mr. Williams gave the presentation that it is very complex. But for me, it's a fairness issue. Social Security tax is a matter of fairness for middle-class retirees and the investment in the financial security of Minnesotans for years to come. The time to stop taxing the hard-earned Social Security benefits is now. With the unprecedented budget surplus in Minnesota, we have an historic opportunity to eliminate this tax and start protecting older Minnesotans. The second part of my bill includes the pension subtraction for public employees. It may come as a surprise, but there are over 25,000 retirees in the state who are not covered by Social Security because their service to government agencies. That's about 5% of all filers over the age of 65. House File 300 contains the pension subtraction for these retirees, firefighters, police officers, and their survivors, teachers, and certainly municipal employees hired before 1978 are included, as the federal employees hired before 1984. So I just got to be honest with you, to me, when they talk about the rich, they'll say rich. Nobody's leaving the state of Minnesota for $4,000 when you make a certain income. That's not the case. I'm sitting here today because of the working class people. You get a husband, a wife, or working, both of them, if they both earn a pension, they both are going to collect Social Security, and if they made some investment and then they go to retire at the age of 65, they're being taxed. It isn't like 30 years ago where there was only one individual working in a household. Now there is, typically you have two different individuals that are going to work there. And we just talked about earlier, we talked about the rent, We had the, for renter's credit and stuff like that, because everything is going up. So we're raising everything because the cost is going up, but we're not taking care of our seniors, our firefighters, our police officers, our teachers, and public employees. That's why I've been fighting for this. The moment is now, with this historic budget, to seize it. We may disagree on the amount, but if we're going to make a decision, there's no better time than right now with the surplus that we have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Lissegard. Representative Hansen, welcome to the committee. Please describe House File 1040 to the members.
Thank you, Chair, and I do have a DE1 amendment.
Yes.
Oh, wait.
Well, so here, we're going to be adopting the bills after we hear the testimony, but if you could just describe your bill with the DE in the form that you want it, and then we're going to take formal action after we're done with public testimony.
I can do that.
Okay, thank you.
I can roll with this.
Great.
Sorry,
it's like we're doing committee confusing way today. It's okay.
You're the boss.
So I've heard.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members, and thank you to members of the public and this packed room today. House File 1040 is targeted to reduce the taxes on Social Security income for about 269,000 people, keeping more money in the hands of Minnesotans who need it. The estimate shows that there would be an average decrease in their taxes of about $524. This bill allows for a 100% subtraction for taxpayers with adjusted gross income below $80,000 for a couple and $62,500 for single filers. House File 1040 is a step that I and many others believe is a step in the right direction. It's realistic, meaningful, pragmatic, and it helps Minnesotans who need it most. The posted House research document really summarizes this bill well, and so I will refer folks to that as well. But this bill, again, eliminates the limitations on the subtraction in current law and instead allows a 100% subtraction for federally taxable Social Security benefits for taxpayers below that threshold. The bill changes the income measure that's used to phase out this subtraction as well. Under current law, the subtraction is phased out under provisional income, and under this bill, the subtraction is phased out under adjusted gross income. The revenue estimate that's posted on the committee website and more information about the precise calculations can be found in your committee documents and at the table here. But I really want to emphasize this part. I grew up in poverty. I'm a single mom. I live paycheck to paycheck, just like 70% of people my age. And so really talking about that every dollar in your pocket matters, especially when you're living on a fixed income. And too many people live paycheck to paycheck, including 53% of people who make between $50,000 and $100,000 a year. Nearly one in five of those in that income bracket say they struggle to pay their bills. 72% who make less than 50 grand identify as living paycheck to paycheck, and one in three in those in that bracket say they struggle to pay their bills. So it's important that we remember that every little bit matters, and every little bit we can put back into the pockets of people who are living close to that range matters. It's up to us to find innovative, targeted, and nuanced solutions to the complex issues that are facing Minnesotans. And with that, I will turn it back to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Representatives Lissegard and Hansen. So what we're going to do now is we're going to turn to testimony from the public so you guys can go sit back where you were, if you don't mind. So we're going to move to testimony, and then time permitted, we're going to see where we get with the public testimony. If we're able to move to member discussion today, we will. If not, we're going to move to that on Tuesday after we hear from members of the public. So before we get started, there are a lot of folks signed up to testify. I'd like to ask you to keep your comments to 2 minutes. Patrick, Mr. McQuillan next to me is going to have the microphone on his little timer, but I don't want to interrupt you and be like, please finish up, and then you'll say, I am going to finish up. I'll just have two more lines. So then we've added another 20 seconds to your testimony. So if you hear the alarm go off, please just say kind of like your final thought, and then we can we'll move on to the next testifier. And I'm going to kind of call people up two by two, tell you who's on deck so that we're not wasting time shuffling between testifiers. Sorry, I'm usually much more easygoing than this, I swear, but we're trying to keep it tight today. So first up, Dr. Alita Baroud, and on deck we have Bill Raker. I apologize if I mispronounced your name.
Okay. Board, okay.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Alita Borud, a senior citizen with Land Stewardship Project, and I'm also a retired doctor who specialized in the care of older patients. You know, our rural seniors are in desperate need right now of services. People who need help with basic activities like housekeeping, personal cares, shopping, are staying in their homes too long because they can't afford assisted living. The average cost of assisted living in my area is over $45,000 a year. That is more than the median income, household income of our oldest Minnesotans. We have a crisis of affordable, supportive senior housing right now. The Dodge County Senior Transport Agency, SEMCAC, told me they rely on an 89-year-old volunteer to drive other frail seniors to their medical appointments on dirt roads in the wintertime. Other seniors are, in fact, delivering Meals on Wheels. We are failing to invest right now in the cares of our rural, the needs of our rural elders who built this great state. You know, the rich have gotten richer during this pandemic, and as a retired doctor, so did I. I don't want this tax cut. I don't need this tax cut. I oppose HF 300 because we cannot bankrupt our future ability to provide for the cares of every older person who needs help to be able to live out their years with dignity, whatever their zip code. And I want investment in public education, childcare, and paid family leave, so we will have a robust, skilled workforce in the 15 to 20 years when I will need that skilled care too. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Borud. I have to say hello to Ms. Kessel because she was my high school assistant principal, and she just walked in. Hello at South High. Thank you for your service. Appreciate you being here. Apologize. Oh, yeah. Don't tell anybody about all the things I did in high school, please. Bill Raker, welcome to the committee. Please please introduce yourself for the record and proceed
Madam
with
Chair?
Your testimony. Yes, Representative Davis.
What was her name?
Kay Kessel. Please don't call her. Okay. Mr. Raker.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Bill Raker. I'm a volunteer with AARP in Minnesota. On behalf of our nearly 620,000 members statewide, we thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of House File 300. We also want to thank Representative Liz Lagarde for bringing this bill forward. AARP has long advocated for Social Security tax relief, and we believe now is the time to stop taxing these benefits. Social Security is an earned benefit. Historically, Social Security was designed as an anti-poverty program, not a way to fund state governments. Our members care deeply about this issue, and they have often been very vocal about it. You'll find stories from some of our members in your packet if you care to take a look at that. It is a benefit that they earned and paid for over a lifetime of work. As you know, before 1984, these benefits were not taxable at all. And today, Minnesota is only one of 12 states that tax Social Security benefits. Because Minnesota follows the federal formula for taxing these benefits, and the federal income levels have not been adjusted for inflation, more and more retirees are paying benefits on these taxes on these benefits. When AARP analyzed the growth in the number and amounts of federally taxable Social Security between 1997 through 2020, we found that the total number of Minnesota returns grew by 29%. But the number of Social Security returns increased over three times, 312%. The problem becomes more acute in times of high inflation. High inflation pushes more recipients into paying taxes on their Social Security benefits. As a result, taxes eat away the recent Social Security increase and leave them vulnerable to other inflationary increases in the cost of living. Exempting these benefits from taxation will provide additional income for security for older Minnesotans and go a long way in helping seniors who are feeling the pressure of rising health and long-term care costs and other expenses such as food, utilities, and property tax increases. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and we urge you to consider, given the historic budget surplus, eliminating this tax. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Raker. And next up is Jen Tudor, and on deck is Louise Sundin. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and members. My name is Dr. Jen Tudor. I'm a professor at St. Cloud State University and president of SCSU's Faculty Association. This is my 20th year at St. Cloud State. I knew that Minnesota was serious about supporting education. So when I moved here, I was excited. When I arrived on campus, we enrolled about 16,000 students. The majority of our students were enrolled full-time. Most had part-time jobs. A handful worked full-time. And we had a wide variety of student organizations and campus events that knit this campus together. The hallways and sidewalks buzzed with students' conversation and laughter. That changed markedly after 2013. Students began taking on more and more debt. They began working more hours and had less time and energy to devote to their classes. Membership in student organizations fell, attendance at campus events dwindled. Student mental health declined. Our campus community was cracking. The pressures of the pandemic combined with ongoing underfunding have fractured that community. In fall 2022, 47.1% of our students are part-time. Many have more than one job. As a result, very few students can participate in campus life. The hallways and sidewalks no longer buzz. This need not be the end of St. Cloud State University's story. This is Minnesota, and we know how to make miracles. We've seen it. In 1980, Minnesota funded 80% of the cost of higher education. And that generation of students built thriving careers and communities. And they learned how to do that on our campuses. This generation won't get that chance unless we decide to provide them with the full educational experience that they need and deserve. Chair Gomez and members, I urge you to view our budget surplus not as evidence of overtaxation, but of underinvestment in the future of Minnesota. Rather than returning a few hundred dollars to those who have already benefited from our past educational investments, we could provide more opportunities to the next generation of Minnesotans. We could heal our fractured communities. We could make miracles again. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Tudor. Nancy Jost or Yost, you're on deck. Louise Sundin, welcome to the committee. Please
Thanks,
introduce
Madam yourself. Chair and committee members. And I'm Louise Sundin, representing 8,000 retirees and active educators in Minneapolis, and Kay is one of us, Madam Chair. We are still 75% women with an unusually high number of single women heads of household like me. That means that we have few options to rely on in retirement except ourselves and our pensions. I'm in the unenviable category of being a basic plan member. Meaning we started teaching prior to 1978 and we're old. As basic plan members, we contributed 10% of salary and were told, you'll be fine. Then we realized that without Social Security, we wouldn't qualify for Medicare, so we asked Martin Sable to help us and he did. So from then on, we voluntarily contributed an additional 4% towards qualifying for Medicare. That's 14% of salary for those of you who are keeping score. When I went to sign up for Social Security, I was feeling pretty good because I had contributed quite a bit to Social Security working for the union for 22 years, and I had a small business designing and decorating store windows. In addition to my 39 years teaching ninth grade English. However, when I filled out the paperwork at the Social Security office, I was told I was one of those, a GPOer. They subtracted my teacher pension from my Social Security, resulting in my qualifying for only a minimum Social Security. The rest is lost, a lot less than I had expected. I was pretty bummed, and that's all I've been getting since 2006. The second group of basics are WEPers. That can be illustrated by a colleague whose husband was a teacher, a football coach, and until his death was a line judge for the Vikings. When he died, my friend got zero of his Social Security death benefit because they were both basic members. Of the 5,000 retirees I represent, half of them, 2,640 to be exact, do not receive the Social Security benefits they earned and contributed to. Call it old math or new math, we're all in the same penalty box. So here I am in the pension pickle jar asking only for the same subtraction language that is currently in law, but not for us basic members. House File 300 will not fix the major inequities we suffer, but it will catch us up with the retirees who have Social Security. Nothing more, nothing less. Thank you to our author and Representative Liz Lagarde for tackling this issue for us, those who have been wept and gypped, if you will. It's a modest commitment, but it moves us a little towards basic fairness for basic pension members. One small step. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sundin. Next up is Nancy Yost or Jost. Mark Lukoski, you are on deck. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Jost, and I am from Fergus Falls. I'm here as a private citizen, a senior citizen, and an early childhood advocate. I have worked in the early childhood field for 50 years as many things, a family friend and neighbor provider, family child care provider, center child care teacher, and many other things. And now, here I am, a senior citizen. These two ages of my life coming together seems a little surreal, the youngest and the oldest. I'm here today to testify against House File 300. I know the struggles of being a parent and a child educator. My parents lived into their 90s. One of my grandmothers lived to 106, so I know the struggles of senior citizen life. But we do not want to pit early childhood against senior citizens or seniors against little children. They're both valuable groups to our society. House File 300 will decrease the amount of funds available for early childhood, but will allow seniors who have high incomes to pay little or no taxes on them. I want us, older members of society, to pay taxes to ensure that little children, the future of our state, get off to a great start. We senior citizens can help that happen. It can be one of our legacies. Little children can't speak for themselves, but we can speak for them to ensure we are being fair to them, that we are balancing our needs with the needs of little children, and that we are helping pay for their future. This proposal, House File 300, does nothing to help low-income seniors who are struggling. It only helps the wealthiest. I believe that older Minnesotans that can should contribute to the collective well-being. Why are we choosing a tax cut for higher income seniors over little children, over low income seniors, and over the collective needs of our state? I am against passing House File 300. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jost. Mark Lukoski, and on deck is Amina Adan. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Gomez.
Good afternoon. Good to see you.
Representative, my name is Mark Lukoski, and I am currently a Minneapolis firefighter and president of Minneapolis Fire Local 82. And I'm speaking today on behalf of about 2,000-plus active firefighters as well as 2,000-plus retired firefighters and their widows. You know, I don't have a bunch of prepared notes. I'm kind of adjust on the fly as we do at work, so I'll just maybe not as polished, forgive me, but I'm just going to tell you like I see it, like it is. I respect and admire putting this bill forward. I think it's a long time coming. I think the room is going to have a hard time debating that relief is needed, especially the people that are in their later years. The revenue stream will create new revenue streams or more revenue streams. It's kind of at an end. Healthcare is obviously getting incredibly expensive, and everything else. I don't think anybody could deny that. But like I said, thanks again for bringing this bill forward. You guys will work it out. I hope it comes with some relief on that. But there's a piece that the gentleman spoke to earlier that is very different than the firefighters piece. Is due to some decision made decades ago, firefighters weren't allowed to participate in Social Security. So with that being said, as he spoke earlier on the tax relief from the feds and the tax relief from the states on their Social Security, their other revenue stream besides what they've created and what they've got, the other pensions, we don't have that revenue stream. And also at the federal level, we do have the Windfall Act that they created that one of my recent retirees, he did have credits, got on the job late, did have an amount he was receiving from Social Security, but they took about 50%, excuse me, from his projected benefit to what he actually got, all on that Windfall Act. I think by not being allowed to participate in Social Security, that revenue stream, that retired dedicated revenue stream, like I said, not being allowed to at no choice of our own, it created a big thing. By not having that, we don't even come into the play of this except for you brought it forward in the bill. So what we're what we're asking is, which everything comes up in politics now, we're asked to be treated equally. We want the same equity as others when we can provide it. I'm asking you to entertain and approve this bill that was brought forward, entertain the piece that gives that pension offset or pension relief to those of us that don't have it. We're just, it'll come from a different spot, but we're just asking for that same relief. And like I said, it's our men and women have responded without hesitation for 25 years or greater. I've got 20 in. The people that are going to follow me are 20 plus in. This is an ask, and we haven't asked anything. This bill, pieces of it, have been trying to move through for 16 years. And now in these times, we fix disparities like that. And like I said, the firefighter side on the money side is really a drop in the bucket. I'm for the whole thing. But like I said, it's I'm asking that you support this bill and make that correction.
Thank you, Mr. Lukoski.
Thank you.
All right. So Amina Adan is up, and on deck, Lucinda Silvis. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. Hi, my name is Amina Adan. I'm a mom of four kids living in Bloomington, Minnesota. I'm also a leader of Muslim Coalition and Kids Count on Us of Isaiah. I'm here to testify against the proposal to put an ongoing, growing $1.2 billion hole into Minnesota's budget by giving away $1.2 billion of our collective resources disproportionately to Minnesota's wealthiest seniors. Many people in my community in Minnesota live in crisis. There are not enough resources to fund childcare for our kids. There are not enough resources to fund public school or particular programs like STEM for immigrant kids in our school system or for after-school programs so that our kids can thrive. Minnesota's marginalized communities are facing challenges that impact their health, stability, and environment. As a refugee family displaced by the Civil War, my family struggled with housing. Moving more than five times in 6 years due to lack of government support, this lack of consistency affected my siblings' academic success. Housing is a human right, and we need to increase taxes on our top earners and invest in public programs to create equitable opportunities for all citizens to thrive regardless of background. We will never get to a Minnesota where everyone can thrive if we continue to disproportionately give breaks and benefits to the wealthiest people in our Minnesota. Minnesota has some of the worst racial equity gaps in the country, and there is a talk all the time from politicians about how we have to address this crisis. There is no path to close this racial equity gaps in Minnesota if we continue down this road. As a leader of Kids Count on Us and Muslim Coalition of Isaiah, we are committed to prioritize equity and justice for all Minnesotans. We believe that every child deserves the opportunity to thrive and reach their full potential regardless of their family's income or background. We cannot achieve this if we continue to prioritize the wealthiest Minnesotans over those who are struggling to make ends meet. We need to invest in all the things that we, all of us, need so every Minnesotan has a path to thrive. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Adan, for being here. Lucinda Silvis, and on deck is Megan Dayton. Hello.
Good afternoon. Thank you for hearing me. My name is Lucinda Silvis. I'm a Minnesota resident and a member of the Minnesota Police Fraternal Association. I have four children and seven grandchildren. I'm here today as a police widow. I was married to a Minneapolis police officer for 40 years until his death from sudden cardiac arrest on Father's Day 2017. Now, my husband was a police officer from 1968 to 1999. He was in the old Minneapolis police pension, didn't pay into Social Security for that job, But he had more than the required 40 quarters from military work before, during, after his police career. But because of the windfall pension that somebody else mentioned, his Social Security benefit was reduced. After they deducted the payment for his Medicare premium, his monthly benefit he received from Social Security was, I had to look this up, $89.20. Now, I was not as hardworking as my husband. I did not have my own 40 quarters in, so I don't get Social Security in my own name. I get no Social Security from his either. I do receive Medicare, but for that I have to send in my premium payment every month. The cost of living increase in my husband's pension was 1% this year. I understand the increase for Social Security recipients was 8.7%. Now, I was lucky. My husband opted to take a lower pension payment so that I would continue to receive it after his death. But I know there are some police widows out there who only get half of their husband's pension, and many of them, especially the older ones, did not have much of a work career themselves. They stayed home with children for many years. So they're really the ones that I'm speaking on behalf of. And city employees in these old pensions did pay into their pension plans, much like people paid into Social Security. So I thank you for hearing me.
Thank you very much, Ms. Silvis. Next up is Megan Dayton, and on deck is Carol Kopp. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Megan Dayton. I'm the president of MAPE. We are a union representing about 15,000 professional state government employees. I'm also a senior demographer responsible for preparing demographic projections for the state of Minnesota. I'm here to testify against House File 300, a piece of legislation that would have significant negative impacts on our society, particularly on our most vulnerable population. As members of MAPE, we see firsthand how the state budget affects the people of Minnesota. We work every day to ensure that Minnesotans have access to safe water and clean air, and we provide assistance to our elderly Minnesotans, those with developmental disabilities, and others in need of support. We help individuals struggling with substance abuse and work to make our communities safer. Additionally, we ensure that state colleges and universities are training the next generation of Minnesotans. We understand the impact of every budget dollar spent, and we know what happens when budgets are cut. Unfortunately, many Minnesotans are currently waiting longer for assistance, and promised services have been delayed. State and local governments are constantly under-resourced, leaving our most vulnerable communities to fend for themselves. As MAPE members, we're not only government employees, but we're also members of the community. Social Security is an essential part of our parents' and our grandparents' lives, and it will be, hopefully, an essential part of ours, too. However, we believe that a more than $1 billion ongoing reduction to the state's general fund created by a total tax repeal on Social Security would do more harm than good and jeopardize the viability of programs upon which seniors rely. Our goal is to help seniors, and to achieve that, we need to invest in areas like reducing the cost of health care and prescription drugs, increasing housing affordability and stability, and increasing or expanding access to paid time off for all Minnesotans. As a demographer, I am deeply concerned about the long-term consequences of repealing the tax on Social Security. Our population is rapidly aging, and the cost of caring for older Americans will only increase. And if the budgets that support this population services are cut, we will have done more harm than good with this change. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dayton. Carol Kopp, on deck is Jim Ryan.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Gomez and members. My name is Carol Kopp, and I'm an English language arts teacher from Grand Rapids, Big Fork. Thank you for the opportunity to share my story with you today. But first of all, I'm a proud educator from outstate Minnesota, and I want to share that a group of our high school FFA students in Grand Rapids have written bills for after-school programming, SF-2383 and HF-2529. Their bill is asking for $19 million, which is far less than the $1 billion needed to fund these tax cuts. I teach 7th grade language arts in outstate Minnesota in Grand Rapids. I oppose any bill that would exempt taxes on Social Security because that money should be going to Minnesota's students. Let me paint a picture for you. My day begins with students needing pencils. However, I don't have the budget to buy pencils. So what does that look like? I barter with 12-year-olds. I have a pencil if they're willing to trade their phone or other worldly possession for the class period. On a side note, I do have to promise not to text or snap. This is a harsh reality in Minnesota's classrooms. I would love to make sure that all of my students have pencils, but I don't have the budget for them, and if I don't pay for them out of my own pocket, students won't have them. 35.5% of Grand Rapids teachers spend anywhere from $200 to $500 per year out of pocket for classroom expenses. Couldn't that $1.6 billion be spent on classroom funding for students? Wouldn't that money be better spent on the future of Minnesota rather than on tax cuts? I want my students to have everything they need to be successful in and out of the classroom, but the reality is that they do not. Many Minnesota classrooms go without, students go without, teachers go without. My students need more. My community needs more. My students need mental health supports. My district needs more ESPs who are paid a living wage. My teachers need to have manageable class sizes to foster productive learning environments. Students need affordable housing. Our students need help with their mental health. Every district in Minnesota has an enormous special education cross-subsidy, and many have English learners cross-subsidy. We are at the very bottom of the school counselor to student ratios. These all cost money, billions of dollars. We simply should not be cutting taxes. If you believe we have a budget surplus, it's only because the legislature has failed to properly fund schools for years. For years. We do not have a surplus. We've just not even come close to funding the needs of our 862,971 students. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kopp. Next up is Jim Ryan. On deck, Carrie Edelman.
Chair Gomez and members, I'm Jim Ryan, the Legislative Vice President of NARF's Minnesota Federation and the Chapter President in Minneapolis. NARF is the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. Since 1992, NARF has been a nonprofit, nonpartisan membership organization dedicated to promoting the general welfare of all federal employees, retirees, and their survivors. Many people think they all work in D.C., but there are 60,718 active and retired federal and postal employees here in Minnesota, with 31,912 federal annuitants, 16,936 active federal employees, and 11,870 U.S. Postal Service employees. Minnesota's second largest employer is the United States Postal Service, and the third largest is the Department of Veterans Affairs. I retired from the Social Security Administration after 40 years of service, mostly here in Minnesota, including as a local office district manager. I have remained active in the community with church service, and in retirement, I have been serving on the board of a small local nonprofit organization where so far this week I've devoted 4.5 hours in helping young age kids in an after school program. Retirement tax relief for government workers who serve the needs of folks throughout Minnesota should be no less than that for other retirees here. To provide anything less would be grossly unfair and detrimental to our communities, but that's what's happening now. Unlike many employees working here in Minnesota, many federal government workers, like myself, have had part of their work careers in other states. 18 states do not have any tax on civil service annuities, and another 5 have an exemption for some federal annuities. It is apparent that significant numbers of federal employees move to those states in retirement, so we Minnesotans miss out on their high level of public service and contributions to our communities after their government service has ended, if they feel comfortable in moving to one of those other states, especially to communities where their service has established roots and connections with such a financial difference.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan.
Thank you
so much for your testimony. I appreciate it. Carrie Edelman, and on deck is Nan Madden. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and members. My name is Carrie Adelman, and I live in Lakeville. I'm a home care worker and a member of SEIU Healthcare, Minnesota, and Iowa. On behalf of my union, I support House File 1040. Our union, which represents 50,000 members in hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, and self-directed home care, believes we need to exempt Social Security for middle-income seniors, but protect the revenue we need to find essential workers in health care, child care, education, and most importantly, a new contract for home care workers. I bring an unusual perspective to this debate. If my life had not taken a significant turn 7 years ago, I might very well be someone who earned too much to qualify for Social Security exemption under this bill. I spent over 20 years working in financial services, was earning a six-figure income and looking forward to my prime earning years. But in the fall of 2015, everything changed. My son Keegan, an Iraqi war veteran, was involved in an accident in which he sustained lifelong injuries. After months in the hospital, we were told to put him in a nursing home, but we declined and brought him home instead. My son is 100% disabled. I struggled to find PCAs to provide my son the care he needs and deserves. Low wages, high turnover, it was always a failure. Without another alternative, I decided to give up my career to take care of him. I hope the new SEIU contract will raise our wage floor for home care workers to $20 an hour. If I knew then how hard PCAs worked and how little they get paid and how much they mean to the elderly and disabled, I would have been happy to pay a little extra in taxes so that we could raise their wages and address the workforce shortage. Having lived through fortunate times and challenging times, I know that what I paid when times were good gets paid back when times are hard. House File 1040 is a good compromise. It protects the retirement of moderate income seniors while preserving the revenue we need to completely fund the programs any of us might need when we least expect it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Adelman. Nan Madden, on deck, James Nicoli.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. I testify today in opposition to replacing our state's targeted approach to Social Security tax exemption with an unlimited exemption for all income levels. We all share the concerns about the challenges that some Minnesota seniors are facing. However, an unlimited Social Security exemption is not a good solution to that problem. Instead, it would make it harder for Minnesota to become a place where everyone, including our seniors, can thrive. Full Social Security exemption provides little, if any, help to the seniors struggling the most. Instead, the highest income households are both more likely to benefit and get the biggest tax cuts. Full Social Security exemption would cost nearly $1.3 billion in the 24-25 biennium and $1.5 billion in 26-27. That's about 28% of the 26-27 structural balance, and the cost will continue to rise as we have more seniors in the state. Minnesota seniors count on public services, such as community-based care to stay in their homes, transit to get to shopping or the doctor, or high-quality nursing home care. The most struggling seniors, as well as their children and grandchildren, would feel the greatest harm from cutbacks in services in response to future deficits. In future tough times, we don't want to repeat the painful experiences that we saw during the frequent state budget deficits in the 2000s, which were made more severe because we went overboard in tax cutting in surplus times. In response to those deficits, local property taxes went up, there were double-digit tuition increases at state colleges and universities, and numerous co-payments, fees, and fines were raised on families and businesses. Minnesotans were worse off because of cuts in public services, including state aids to cities and counties, impacting public health, public safety, infrastructure, and more. Cuts to schools, health care, child care, housing, and homelessness. Many of the problems you are struggling with today have their roots in those cuts in the 2000s. We don't need to provide permanent tax cuts to the wealthiest in order to help seniors currently facing financial struggles. Please continue Minnesota's targeted approach to Social Security exemption and protect the public services that Minnesota seniors, as well as their children, grandchildren, and communities count on. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Madden. James Nicolay, you're up on deck. Mark Haveman. Welcome to the committee. Please just introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is James Nicolay. I'm a retired early childhood and child care worker. I'm part of an organization called Elders for Infants. And I've spent 45 or 50 years in early childhood education. And during that time, we often would come to the legislature for some support and also try to help the legislators understand that the first 1,000 days of a child's life are the most critical in terms of brain development and learning and need to have the most attention. Unfortunately, usually if there's a surplus of any kind, then there's a groundswell of, well, we charge too much in taxes, so we have to cut taxes, and there's nothing left for the youngest. Or if there's a deficit projected, now we have to cut what little there was out there for infant care and child care. So we haven't made much progress in the 40 or 50 years that I've been at this. The horizon is always, what shall I say, optimistic. So I would say vote, oppose House File 300, use the money for the youngest children so we can invest there. And the seniors that I know who would benefit from this cut will be just fine. They'll be just fine. And there's enough money then to go around for the youngest and as well as the seniors. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Nicolay. Mark Haveman, you're up on deck. Joseph Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Mark Haveman. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Center for Fiscal Excellence. I'm going to be focusing my remarks on House File 1040, although in your packet is sort of a longer form discussion and analysis of the arguments and policy issues surrounding the full exclusion that also sort of concludes that we consider to be flawed policy based on both practice and good tax policy principles. But if targeted relief to seniors is the goal and Social Security taxation is the mechanism for providing that relief, we believe House File 1040 is the best way for lawmakers to tackle this issue. That's because it addresses the biggest problem surrounding current state tax treatment of this income, as you've heard already, is extraordinary complexity and lack of transparency. Recent research published in the Journal of the National Tax Association examined the effects of Social Security taxation on older workers' income and claiming decisions and concluded, quote, overall, the findings suggest that older taxpayers have little understanding of the rules governing Social Security benefit taxation. And so it's reasonable to conclude current state tax treatment based on the federal system is likely causing a lot of constituents that lawmakers are hearing from to believe their income is being taxed when it isn't or will be taxed as they approach retirement when it wouldn't be. A shift from the subtraction built on provisional income to one based on adjusted gross income makes the existence of any taxation of Social Security benefits much more understandable. The ability to say if your adjusted gross income is less than 80,000 or whatever level you choose it to be, your Social Security income will not be taxed is an important transparency improvement. I would like to offer two suggestions for you to consider. First, given the extraordinary politics and passion of this issue, you could consider making the threshold more generous. Just eyeballing the Department of Revenue's latest distributional analysis, it appears to us that a 125,000 AGI threshold, which we would note represents about the lifestyle of a two median earner household in their working years, would eliminate Social Security income taxation from about three quarters of the households who are currently paying this tax at about half the cost of the current exclusion. And secondly, for fairness purposes, this provision should be combined with an add-on to the existing senior standard deduction. A smartly designed add-on could comprehensively address the fairness issues arising out of households that don't receive Social Security, as well as households far more dependent on earnings and taxable private pensions, and do it all in a cheaper way. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Haveman. Joseph Jackson, on deck, Naomi English. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, my name is Chairman Gomez, members of the committee. My name is Joseph Jackson, and I am a student at Minneapolis Community and Technical College, where I have the opportunity to serve as the Student Senate President. It is said that budgets are moral documents and that they reveal and the priorities and values of our society. Minnesota has abandoned its young people by balancing the state budget on their backs through its disinvestment of higher education and skyrocketing tuition. Over the last 20 years, Minnesota has increased tuition for students attending public colleges and universities by an astounding 293%. Thanks to these massive tuition increases, students are drowning in debt. Minnesotans carry $29 billion in student loan debt. This debt is holding back an entire generation from moving out of their parents' house, from getting reliable transportation, from even starting a family. I am sure this debt even impacts members of this committee. Please don't turn your backs on the young people that desperately need to gain skills for all the open positions in this state. From the nurses to the plumbers, from the construction workers to the auto mechanics, these are the jobs that require skills that are in short supply, yet we are pricing them out of that education. That is why I am here asking you to reverse the trend and make investment in higher education. Millennials and Gen Z are shaping up to be the first generation since World War II who won't have a better quality of life than their parents. This is the society that we have inherited from our elders. We need to work together to make investment in our people so that we can live in a better Minnesota. I would encourage this committee to heed the words of Bob Dylan when he said, "Our old road is rapidly aging. Get out of the new one if you can't lend a hand." Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Naomi English, you're up. Philip Sando is on deck. Sorry, just for the lobbyists in the room, I'm kicking you guys to the end of the order because you guys are here every day, and we're going to make room for the folks who made a special trip over. So,
Chair Gomez and members of the committee, my name is Naomi English. I am a retired nurse and a member of Minnesota Nurses Association's Committee of Active Retired Nurses. I am here today to testify on behalf of my union and to share our concerns about the proposal to eliminate taxes on Social Security. This proposal would cost billions of dollars and would go mostly to high-income retirees. The money would be better spent investing in future generations and ensuring that everyone has the health care, the child care, and the affordable housing they need. So I am here to share that message. But I am also here because I've been hearing a lot in the media and on the internet about my fellows, about me and my fellow seniors. And I wanted to say publicly that for me and for many in this room, this proposal does not represent us. Not all Minnesota seniors want a tax cut. Many of us have benefited from affordable college. We've sent our kids to public schools and even phoned the fire department a couple times. After a lifetime spent working, I want these services to work better, not worse, for my two grandkids and for their grandkids, who I will never meet. So I have something to say that the seniors who have decided that they have done their part, that they are ready to coast along while young people and family fund the roads, the nursing homes, and the long-term care that we rely on. Shame on you. What sort of an example is this to set? These are not the Minnesota values that I have come to understand. That is not the attitude that inspired me through 24 years as a critical care nurse here in St. Paul. This is not the legacy that I want for my generation. If we are going to do something for seniors, what about focusing on those who are actually in need? In Minnesota, we take care of one another and we all contribute. I keep hearing that we are only one of 11 states that tax some amount of Social Security, and I say good. I don't wake up every morning eager to pay more taxes, but I have lived here 33 years and I am proud of our commitment to one another, and I am certainly not going to leave Minnesota over a couple of bucks a month. This is my home and I care for it. I think we all should. I hope that you will reject this bill and others like it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. English. Philip Sando, you're next. On deck is Mark Felsheim.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and members of this committee.
My name is Philip Sandro, and I live in Shoreview, Minnesota. I am testifying against House File 300, the full repeal of the Social Security tax, which amounts to an ongoing $1.2 billion tax cut, much of which would go to the state's highest earners. My wife and I are both retired and in our 70s. We live on a lower middle class income with $8,000 per year of non-generic drug costs, despite having a premium Medicare Advantage plan. There is a very good chance in the future that one of us or both of us will need a nursing home or home health care. It would be a great comfort to us and lessen our anxiety to think that part of this ongoing $1.2 billion were instead used to further defray the costs of a nursing home and not bankrupt us. My son is a young man of color, and he may eventually decide to get married and they might have a child. But I would want my child and all children in Minnesota to have quality daycare so that they could thrive and better contribute to our society instead of being at the mercy of our current patchwork and unaffordable child care system. Let us use some of those ongoing $1.2 billion and rising instead of the patchwork and often unaffordable child care system that we have now. I could say much more, but my time is limited. And again, I want to thank Chair Gomez and members of this committee, and thank you all on this committee for your public service. I urge you to vote no on House File 300. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sandro. Perfect timing. All right. Mm-hmm. Mark Felsheim, and then Julie Abrahamson. Abrahamson, you're on deck.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for letting me speak, and thank you for your service. Nobody's mentioned that. Without you, we don't have a democracy, so I really appreciate your service, whatever political party you are. My name is Dr. Mark Felsheim. I live in Eagan, Minnesota, and I'm here today to ask you to eliminate the Minnesota's income tax on Social Security benefits. And I'm doing it. I've never regretted paying taxes. I just looked on my thing. I've paid taxes for over 52 years, and I'm happy to do it. And I continue to pay taxes. And if you eliminate this, I will continue to pay taxes on any income beyond my Social Security. Social Security was passed by President Franklin Roosevelt in 1935 as a federal safety net. It is the minimum that we should give to people so they can live. That's what it was intended to do. It would be like taxing welfare benefits. Originally, I'm going to skip down here. So my wife and I moved back to Minnesota from Milwaukee. Our children live here. They were raised in White Bear Lake, Minnesota, and we wanted to be close to our children. When we moved, I knew that Wisconsin does not tax Social Security, and Minnesota does. And we seriously thought about settling in Hudson or in River Falls because of that. But I noticed that there was a bipartisan agreement in the summer to repeal the tax on Social Security, so we decided to settle in Eagan. I love Eagan, and we want to stay in Minnesota. It's interesting, I checked, by the way, we'd actually be closer to our son if we lived in Hudson. So we're talking about moving 25 miles east to save that tax. I've got over 40 years as a professional educator. I don't want to stop. I now work as a paraeducator or teacher aide for Inver Grove Public Schools, making about $20 an hour, and I love it, and I pay tax on that, and I'm happy to pay tax on that. And I'm sure one last thing I just want to mention, I'm sure all of you agree, we haven't thought about the economic impact. If I move back to Wisconsin, I'm not only not paying the Minnesota tax on Social Security, if I am, I may not even have to pay it, but you will definitely not get tax money on every other income I make. And I think we need to think about that. How many people, how much money are you losing for retirees who decide to go to another state where they don't have to pay that tax? And more important, last thing, it also sends a message to seniors. The message is, we're going to tax your Social Security. Thank you for supporting the state. Thank you for all your contributions, but you're not welcome here anymore. Please go to another state where they don't tax Social Security. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Julie Abrahamson, and we're going to get Steve Georgie in. I hope I'm not mispronouncing your name, but you're on deck. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Julie Abrahamson. I live in Brooklyn Park. I'm testifying against House File 300, the full repeal of the Social Security tax. I am a retired chemistry professor who knows the merits of data in the climate change discussion. The climate emergency cannot be ignored. Now is time to get serious. I'm also a grandmother who cares deeply about the future we leave for our grandchildren. I treasure exploring the many beautiful parks around the state with my 8 and 6-year-old grandkids. Their wonder and curiosity are endless. They're old enough to cringe and be aghast when they observe the sheen of a non-aqueous substance on the water surface in Minnehaha Creek. They cannot comprehend how anyone could spill such toxic things into their waterway. They remember the summer of 2021 when the air quality was so awful from raging wildfires so that people like their dad wore masks outdoors, even at a county park. And he's not even particularly susceptible to respiratory hazards. Cutting the Social Security tax is not what Minnesotans need. It would devastate our ability to invest in measures to ensure clean air, water, and energy for everyone, regardless of zip code, race, or economic privilege. Let's invest in the transition to a green economy. Let's electrify our school buses and other buses. Let's invest in comprehensive transit, public schools, health care, child care, our collective needs. Instead of cutting this tax, we have the opportunity to invest in measures that help low-income seniors, those 600,000 Social Security recipients who would get nothing from this measure. Giving a $1.2 billion tax cut to those who are wealthy enough to be comfortable just does not make sense. Please vote no on this bill.
Thank you. Mr. Georgie.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and committee members. My name is Steve Georgie. I'm the executive director for the Range Association Municipalities and Schools, better known as RAMS. We're a unique advocacy agency up on the Iron Range representing public sector communities and public schools in the taconite assistance area of northeastern Minnesota. RAMS puts together a legislative list of priorities each and every year, and on this year's list we have support for proposals on education funding at 5 and 5 on the basic formula. Elimination of the special ed cross subsidy or 100% funding for it. We support higher education, early childhood education. We support financing for housing. And along with that, our board of directors, which is made up of 22 publicly elected officials across those communities in the taconite assistance area, the elimination of the tax on Social Security. We support House File 300. We respect and appreciate the work of Representative Lislegaard on this issue. It's been a issue that's come up for a number of years with the RAMS board. It may seem a little unusual, but when you look at the makeup of that board of directors, many of them are retirees who are still serving the communities by being elected officials. I think it goes back to a statement made by Representative Sosinski. Who spends it better, the retirees or the legislature? We're not asking, and I'm not hearing anything about proposed cuts if this tax is eliminated. It becomes part of the $50+ billion budget the state of Minnesota will ultimately come to in a tax bill. So at this time, we simply think it's the right thing to do. Got a huge surplus. It's $18 billion. We think it goes well with the other revenue streams that we can do it at this time, and we ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Georgie. All right, so we are just at time, so it looks like our member discussion is going to happen on Tuesday. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much to everyone from the public, that testified on this. We just always appreciate your presence here in the Tax Committee and the perspective that you bring. And we'll see everybody on Tuesday. With that, we are adjourned.